through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome in to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here this hour, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. There is a conversation we're going to be having all off season, Jake, that doesn't have one, two, or even three answers. And that's what makes it a fascinating conversation, but also an infuriating one. And it is no surprise what happened to the Seahawks offense in the second half of the season. There are some answers that will become apparent as the season progresses. For instance, if we see a new OC come in and they change up their game plan and somehow they're more effective with the run game, or if Chris Carson comes back or they replace him and they're effective there, you'll be able to figure out, okay, they weren't running effectively. Okay, they didn't have this part of their game plan. Then there are some questions that we'll never really figure out. And those are the ones that drive me crazy. But one Seahawk player tried to add a little bit of insight, though maybe unintentionally, but it's still pretty eye-opening. So DK Metcalf was on Brandon Marshall's podcast, I Am Athlete. And Brandon Marshall, like any of us, asked DK Metcalf, what the heck happened to your offense in the second half of the season? Cut number one, here's what DK said.
What happened to the Seattle Seahawks, bro?
I guess teams just started to figure us out.
Yeah.
We've been running deep past ever since Pete got there. It's play action, run the ball, go deep. Team just said we just not gonna let y'all go deep.
Oh man, I don't know how you felt when you watched that, but my blood was boiling. Not at DK Metcalf and not what he said, because what he said I don't think is all that earth shattering. I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I really don't think it's that surprising. That's what Pete Carroll's football is all about. It is being able to run the ball and being able to play action deep down the field. Now, we'll get into the fact of, did they actually do that effectively in terms of running the football and having balance, particularly in the second half of the season, which they did not. But for DK Metcalf's comments, they figured us out. They took away what we want to do, which is to pass the ball deep down the field, and we didn't have an answer for that, to me, is completely unacceptable. Can never happen again. And so we've been around this conversation before, but you didn't hear DK Metcalf in exit interviews after the season ended. This is really the first time you've heard him comment on anything that transpired at the end of the season. And when you look at just overall, Stacy, if you're looking at this from DK Metcalf's perspective, I really do believe, without getting into too much of the details from his end and revealing too much of what's happened inside, you know, on the field and in the locker room and in those meeting rooms, they didn't do enough. They didn't do enough to combat a simple version of a coverage, which was too high coverage, which was something that was played more often against them in the second half of the season, not by necessarily design, but that's just the style of defenses that those teams particularly played in the second half of the season. And you did not have an effective answer or strategy to combat it. And that is what still to this day is just baffling to me beyond words.
Well, it is, because you had Chris Carson, and I know that Chris Carson missed several games when he wasn't healthy, but then he came back. Not only did he come back, but Carlos Hyde came back. You saw the difference in Carlos Hyde's ability as a runner compared to, no disrespect meant, but your rookie DJ Dallas and then your second-year player Travis Homer, who's just a different type of running back.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the talent level difference, and yet Seattle didn't necessarily turn to him. And I know that there are people saying, who cares? Don't turn to the run. I don't want to be a run-first team. That, arguably, to Pete Carroll's point, would have helped. I guess I don't get why they didn't then do that. It's like they continued to pass and just didn't do so effectively. If you're going to continue to pass, add an intermediate game, get your tight ends involved, be a little creative. I guess that's what was so frustrating to me, that I had seen this offense go from looking the best it ever had to looking like the worst it had. And it's not the first time Russell Wilson had seen too high safety. We're talking about it like it's like, what did the league figure out? That's like a basic thing. It's not the first time he's seen it. It's not the first time DK Metcalf or any of these guys have gone against coverages like that. I don't get it, frankly. It feels like they were stuck in the middle and didn't make a decision on which way to go.
Correct. And I do believe that that was the case. And to be quite frank and to be blunt, that's why Brian Schottenheimer is no longer the offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. Just straight up. I do believe that there was probably some conflict in terms of how to go about it, in terms of how to better this offense in the second half of the season. I do believe that Pete Carroll did want to run the football more, which if you compare it to the numbers, Chris Carson during the season, you know what his average per carry, and I'm factoring in the fact that he only...
Am I guessing?
Yeah. 12 games. He only played 12 games.
3.8.
3.8?
Average per carry?
No. How many carries did he get per game?
Oh, per game? 16.
He got less than that.
Oh my God, 11.
He got 11 or 12.
Jeez.
He got 12 at most average per carries. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense when you talk about, you know, Chris Carson and the special back that he is. And there was a lot of conversation about, well, you got to keep him healthy. You got to do everything that you can to try and keep him healthy. But when you talk about a coach that wanted to be balanced and have a balanced attack, much like the Green Bay Packers had this season, they were not able to effectively do that. And it became a passing-oriented offense that wasn't dynamic. It became a passing-oriented offense that in the first 8 games of the season, this is where I get confused and I scratch my head, Stacey, is that everybody focuses on the big explosive plays down the field, but that's not necessarily what this offense thrived on in the first 8 weeks of the season. Russell Wilson was on it, getting the ball out of his hands quickly, distributing the football to a variety of different places and then taking shots down the field. And they got away from that. It's like all of a sudden, all they knew, all they majored in as an offense was 7-step drops and deep play action passes, which put your offensive line in a really bad spot. It put your quarterback in a bad spot. And you were going against defenses that was the design, is to take those types of plays away. So when you watch in the playoffs versus with these really good offenses and these good coordinators and these guys that really have it dialed in, they were able to run the ball effectively at different points in time, but they were also able to come up with different ways to attack the short to intermediate voids in the zone and get their playmakers the ball. And so if you're DK Metcalf, who's sitting there and you hear that soundbite from him, and you also hear in cut number 2 how his goal for himself and his career and where he envisions his career going at when it's all said and done is being a Hall of Famer one day.
Don't ever let making it be the mountaintop.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I know a lot of people, once they make it to the league, know that's it. Like, I've made it, and I'm fighting for a gold jacket. That's my goal.
So, if that's your goal, if that's your desire, and you want to win games, but you also want to be remembered as one of the best receivers to ever play the game, and that's what DK Metcalf wants to be, he doesn't just look at this year and is satisfied with the results that happen. He's not the guy that sits there and goes, Stacey, I made it. I'm at the mountaintop. I'm in the league. I'm being recognized. There's all this publicity about me. That's not the way DK Metcalf is DNA. That's not the way he's programmed. And I love that about him. And when you look at what happened in the second half of the season, there's no wonder that he was frustrated and that he showed a passion and emotion during the Rams game, because you watch this group in the second half of the season get stalled out by the same types of issues and situations. And now you, as fans, as we look past just the Seahawks and we watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and we watch the Bills and we watch Kansas City and you watch Green Bay and the way that they operated through the playoffs, you're going, why couldn't we do that?
Well, and I guess it's weird to me that Pete Carroll, who knows how he would have liked to combat some of the looks Seattle was seeing defensively, didn't tell Schottenheimer then, look, I'm done. I'm done. I am not agreeing with how Pete Carroll would have wanted to play most effectively with the personnel he had. Although I do think he can run a lot more than they were with Chris Carson with some of the linemen they had. It is weird to me that he just let it keep happening. I mean, I know part of that is the decision you make as a leader, right? Do I part ways with an offensive coordinator when we're in the middle of a playoff hunt going after a top seed? Absolutely not. No, I don't do that. But it is weird just feeling like they were running at a brick wall over and over, and everyone knew every single week what was coming.
I think it really comes down to the simple fact that, Stacey, when you look at this offense moving forward, and Pete Carroll said after the season, we need to be able to run the ball more. We need to be able to run the ball more effectively. He's not wrong in that statement. As I said to you, Chris Carson had 12 yards per carry. Your best back had 12 carries per game.
I do want to point that out. I think that's important to say. The idea that I think you're right in saying, look, Pete Carroll got involved with the offense and you started to see a break. But the second half of that problem is that they didn't stick to either person's philosophy after that. They just kind of went down the middle ineffectively.
Correct.
That's what I'm hearing.
They went down without a map, without a direction. And you're doing this with a group that, when you're talking about it from a offensive perspective, and when you go back and you watch the film and you study the tape and you watch how they're going and attacking these defenses, they lost tempo. They lost a sense of aggressiveness. They pulled back a lot of the freedom that Russell Wilson had at the line of scrimmage that he was doing very, very well at the beginning of the year, putting you in good positions, whether it be the run game or the passing game. You became very lackluster because of it. And then the other factor of it is that you just didn't have great schemes. It's all of it in one, I think, is what happens when you watch everything unfold in the second half of the season, and they could never get themselves out of it.
Can I ask a genuine question?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't you want an intermediate pass game? Is it like, I know that there are complexities to this that I will not understand, but why are we as fans talking about it as an either or thing this offseason?
I think that the reason why, and this was something that I was always worried about with Brian Schottenheimer when he got here in Seattle, was that he fit into exactly what Pete Carroll wanted, which was a run-oriented coordinator that had experience being effective taking deep shots down the field. That's what Brian Schottenheimer majored in, okay? That's what he majored in. Now you're asking Brian Schottenheimer to do something that he's not majoring in, which is to pass the ball 30, 35 times a game. He's not running the ball or giving it to his workhorse in Chris Carson to set up those deep play-action passes down the field. And what he is best known for, or what he's most comfortable with, is those seven-step drop passes. And guess what? Against the Rams in the wild card, if you go and look back, there are, I would say, three plays in the game. One of them, the most notable, is the one where Russell just had to rush his throw. And if he had a half a second longer, he hits DK Metcalf wide open in stride on the post for a wide open touchdown. There were three to four of those plays that were there. But Russell had no shot because there wasn't the protection. And how do you combat that, Stacey? Well, you do what the Green Bay Packers did. You get the ball out of your quarterback's hands. You move the ball up and down the field. You are a dink and dunk offense that Pete Carroll has also said to the media. I believe it was 2 years ago, where in training camp, he said one of the first days in training camp, I don't want a dink and dunk offense. So Brian Schottenheimer isn't necessarily going rogue to the plan. It's just not something that they majored in. It's not something that they trained in the offseason and through camp and everything else and have a great background in doing. And that's why this offensive coordinator hire is so dang important this year, because you can't be that. You cannot have an area of the field not be available to you.
Yeah.
You can't have an area that you're weak at when you have the talent and the pieces to be able to attack and be able to approach them just like anybody else, just like Tampa Bay, just like Green Bay, just like Kansas City. You need a better offensive line, and I hope they make those additions during the year. But when you're disconjointed in terms of what you want to do and who you want to be, it's never a winning formula, and that's truly where they were at.
It's well said. You know what they needed too, Jake?
What?
Jimmy Graham.
Oh, that would have solved. That would have solved everything.
They would have won the Super Bowl with him.
Did nothing wrong.
They probably would have put him attached to the line of scrimmage, asked
Jimmy
him to block.
Would have been furious.
They probably would have asked him to block Leonard Floyd, and that would have worked extremely well.
Why must you say this, Jake?
Because it's true.
Jake, stop. Stop right now. It's 11:15. That means it's time for three questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
From the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, I am disturbed and appalled. Jake, did you see this come in?
No.
I'm speechless. From the 206, Stacy, have you seen that ESPN stole your idea and published a 2020 All Short Guys team article?
No way.
Wow. Oh. Is Brady, we're getting Brady Henderson on the phone immediately.
They're jacking us.
I've been talking about my all petite all star team for years.
Well, you want to know what's wrong with this happening is that you didn't trademark your idea.
Oh, you're right. Not like we did with Bold Takes.
Correct.
Trademark.
Yes.
Yeah. You're right.
So
okay.
That's on you.
This is on me. This is
when you
fault.
Come up with a great idea like right. that, you right. have to trademark it or else ESPN, those vultures, they're going to come in. The national ESPN is going to come in. They're going to swoop in and take your idea.
Just, it's gutting. Okay, Curtis, question one. Sorry.
Question number one, a year ago today, one of the more stunning moments in sports history, Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, seven others passing away in a helicopter crash. Is that the most shocking sports story of your lifetime?
I think so. For personally, I tried to think through some of the other things that have happened, but I believe that Kobe Bryant, what happened to him, and just how shocking it was to hear what happened and to hear the information kind of trickle in, stunned me. Absolutely stunned me. So I would say that it definitely is the most shocking sports story of my lifetime. And it's really sad to see somebody that was really taking the next step. It's very rare when you see, truly, when you see somebody who had such a dominant career professionally be able to enter the next phase of life, having potentially a bigger impact as a mentor. Mm-hmm. In the next phase and then have that cut short and to not have that realized and to have his daughter Gianna, who by all, you know, all the dreams and aspirations that she had and the seven other people that were a part of that helicopter crash, have their lives and their families' lives instantly changed in a moment. Gosh, it is sad and disturbing, and it's a great reminder to love your loved ones every single day. Don't take it for granted.
Yeah. Exactly. It was, for me, the most shocking. Jake, Curtis, and myself are all a little too young to have, like, any of the stuff that happened in the early, mid-90s, and there were some big stories then.
The O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah, all of us were a little too young for that. And so that would be an answer that would probably be pretty common among folks, but the Kobe Bryant news was... Like many people, I'm sure, you saw it and you just stared at it. I saw it on TMZ first, so I saw the tweet come across my timeline and just stared, and it was like, you see it in front of you, and you still can't believe it, and you're clicking on it, and you're still thinking, not is it a joke, but just like, am I reading this? You're stunned, truly stunned. And like Jake said, the loss of life, not just of him, but of his young daughter, of the other... young athletes on that helicopter with him and their families, it was devastating.
I was on an airplane to the Super Bowl when the news hit, and I didn't have my phone on me because we're 30,000 feet in the air,
right.
But the seats each had a monitor in them that you could watch like three or four channels on, and one of them was CNN.
Did it pop up on there?
That's how I found out, and you know, it was crazy just sitting on that information for a couple of hours and knowing what the social media timelines are going to look like once you land. It was insane. I will never forget where I was when finding out that news, but definitely the most shocking sports story in my life.
You know what else is really shocking in all of this, not to take away from this moment, is the fact that Stacy said that us three are younger. Two of us are younger. Stacy is part of a lot of history.
Oh, man. I cannot wait until April and June of this year when Curtis and Jake finally turn 30. It's going to be the best day of my life. You no longer get to claim your 20s. Someone did text in saying, OJ was so much bigger. Yeah, but I'm talking about things that we actually remember.
Number two.
Stacy was trying to jog her memory of like the 40s and 50s.
Stop.
Any other moments stood out to her?
Maybe the Miracle on Ice.
Yeah, that's Stacy's.
Yeah, Al Michaels' call. Stacy remembers that vividly.
I hate both of you.
Well, this is what happens when you claim that we're like 16 or 15. You're going to get it right back. So.
When I saw Babe Ruth hit his first home run,
I was marveled at
it. It was amazing.
Marveled at the distance. Question two, how far could this year's Patriots have gone with Tom Brady still on the roster?
I would say probably the wild card. Wild card at best. And the reason why I would say wild card is a lot of people said, well, oh, okay, well, look at what happened to the Patriots and the COVID list. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say a lot of those stars looked at this season and knew that Tom Brady wasn't going to be there and said, this season isn't worth it. I'm going to sit this one out. The uncertain aspect of what COVID is going to bring to the NFL. Remember, the NFL at that time really didn't have a clear-cut plan as to how they were going to execute testing and their protocols and all of that when a lot of these guys were making this decision. Also, do you want to enter a year like that when you know without a quarterback that your team's not going to be very good? I don't know. So, but if Tom Brady was there, I do think a lot of those stars on defense probably end up playing this season. I could be wrong, but that's just what my gut tells me. So I think they would at least get to the wild card.
Stacy, what was it like watching the first ever NFL game live? It was a crazy time. I was thinking about this question the other day too, Curtis. I think it's a good one because if Tom Brady wins a Super Bowl, and we won't even have to wait a couple years, the conversation will immediately and certainly in the future be about how Brady somehow won, right? About how it's Bill versus Brady, and you can always say that, well, Brady won without Bill. It's going to be the same thing where if Brady wins and years from now we're talking about Mahomes versus Brady, people will always point to that Super Bowl and say, well, when they faced head-to-head, Brady won. So all of that is devoid of any context, which I think is important to Jake's point, that Bill Belichick entered a season with a lesser offensive line, lesser receiving weapons, and defensive stars opting out of the year. And even with Tom Brady, they would not have been a Super Bowl team.
Number three.
Question three, the Super Bowl lead-up this year will obviously be very different from a traditional one. So will there be any aspects we've come to expect that you're going to miss?
Yeah, I'm going to miss the pageantry of it. I mean, this week, media row, all that. I mean, there's usually some fun comments that are being made that we can react to during the week from players and from just random interviews that end up happening on media row. But the other part of it is game day itself. When you see the crowd there and you see the lights flashing before kickoff and you got the military flyovers that are going on and you see the crowd reacting to it and the players feeling the energy of the moment, that's special in and of itself, and not just the game, all of that leading up to it, to me is what makes that Super Bowl so special and such a big moment. And you're not going to have that. It's going to be really, really weird.
Let's get back to some of these questions. I'm curious especially about the impact this Super Bowl could have on future conversations about legacy. Also going to be talking about the Seahawks offense. We'll do that with Mike Salk, who joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Welcome back in to Jake and Stacey. Jake Heaps, Stacey Ross here. We're joined now by Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Getting some hand sanitizer. Getting
a little hand sanitizer. I just solved a major jigsaw puzzle problem.
Proud of you.
In my office. I'm in a good mood. I'm ready to go. It's
Sounds
been
like
a productive
you were working
day.
Hard in there.
Oh, yeah. Brock and I did our podcast this morning.
Oh, I thought you were going to say our puzzle together.
Yeah, Brock and I work. We do like 1,000-piece puzzles.
Yeah, I was going to say when Salk's like talking about puzzles,
thing.
He literally means, and it's not like the 1,000, it's like the 15.
Jake, I watch a lot of Survivor. Those are harder than you think.
The U.S. states. Where does Nebraska go?
Oh, this one's not fitting.
How come Idaho doesn't fit here in the bottom right corner? It looks like Florida upside down.
Have you considered bringing Salk your leftover puzzles that Jackson has figured out?
I do, yes, yes, because I know Salk loves them so.
You don't think I have my own leftover puzzles from when my girls were Jackson's age?
Hey,
congratulations to Jake Heaps. Have you guys given him the big congrats today?
Of course we have. Okay. Do you want to tell the people why?
I just saw it on Twitter. I was trying to watch Wonder Woman 84 this weekend.
How was that?
I made it through 38 minutes,
good
so I thought
you.
I deserved a medal of some sort. And
sure.
So 35 minutes or so in, I start scrolling Twitter because it was that bad and I was that bored. And what do I see? But Jake has decided to extend the amount of time that his life is taken up by little ones.
That's right.
By at least a few more years. He's going to have a third kid.
Yes.
And now you're going to be a girl dad.
I know. I'm pumped. Yeah,
I'm so happy.
Do you have any advice? Is there
awesome.
Special girl dad advice?
Well, I don't know because I've never had boys. I just have two girls. I only know what it's like having girls. They're great. They're much cleaner.
Well, I can imagine that because my house is a mess.
You get peed on significantly less when they're little. Like nothing shoots up at you.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, the thing is that Jackson and Bodie have never had that problem.
Lucky you.
Which I am very, very grateful for.
Yeah, I have too many friends who've experienced the peed in the face problem.
Yeah, no, thank
Girls
you.
Girls are awesome. You're gonna absolutely adore having a daughter. I'm so happy for you.
Well, I appreciate that, Salk.
And for Brooke.
Yeah. Brooke is, she's a trooper through all this. With the Seahawks, Salk, I have, reading between the tea leaves, there is a certain position right now that I think that we're talking about offensive coordinator, we're talking about who is the next guy, and I put out a poll on Twitter today because I'm really getting the feeling that this is going to be between three guys.
I saw your poll. There's a name I never heard of on there.
Stacey Ross.
Which one is that?
Yeah, Stacey Ross.
Where was my name on there?
What's this guy's name? He's got, like, what's his name?
Luke Getzey.
Luke Getzey.
Oh.
So I looked that guy up, Luke Getzey.
Yeah.
Because I was curious because I didn't know the name. I know Ken Dorsey, right? He was the quarterback at Miami. I think when my sister was there.
Correct.
And then you got, who was your other name there?
Shane Waldron.
We've heard his name.
He's the passing game coordinator for the Rams, and Luke Getzey is
the
QB coach and passing game coordinator for Green Bay.
Well, when you look him up, it says his name is Luke John Getzey, which really, to me, sounds like a serial killer.
Well, because serial killers always have the three names. It's there was a tweet going around saying, Your serial killer name is your first name, middle name, and last name.
Yeah, well, Luke John Getzey sounds like a serial killer. Who is that guy?
Well, it sounds like John Wayne Gacy.
It does, I know.
Well, Luke Getzey has some background in Green Bay. He's been there off and on for a couple years. He was there at the end of the years with Mike McCarthy, and then he went to be the offensive coordinator for Mississippi State for a year and then came back when LaFleur was hired. And has been there now as the passing game coordinator and QB coach. So
you know what I'd want to do if I were the passing game coordinator and QB coach right now in Green Bay?
What's that?
Leave. I'd like to leave.
Really?
I'd like to not be there. I Brock and I were talking about this morning. The Aaron Rodgers thing makes me more and more mad the more I think about it. That he has the gall to throw his coach under the bus after putting him in an impossible position like that.
An impossible position?
They came up with three picks in the second half. They didn't do anything with two of those drives at all. Rodgers didn't do squat.
But it comes down to that moment, Mike.
But the only reason it comes down to that moment is because of the huge problems that his offense had leading up to it. And don't forget the two things he himself didn't do on second and third down. So the question that was asked of him was what? What led him? What'd
you think of the decision?
And he said it wasn't my decision.
Yes.
You know what my next follow-up question would be? Whose decision was it to chuck the ball at the feet of the receivers on second and third down? Was that also Matt LaFleur's decision?
Because I feel
like that was yours, Aaron.
I hear you, but at the end of the day, he will be MVP next week. They're going to name him MVP.
And then,
you took
unfortunately,
the ball out of his hands.
On second and third down, he chucked the ball at the feet of a receiver.
So you have to punish him by taking the ball out of his hands?
Yes.
When it matters most?
Well, he certainly screwed the pooch on second and third.
You know,
now you're going to give him the ball on fourth? Oh, by the way, even if you get it, because you faltered so badly earlier in the second half, you're giving the ball to Brady tied with 2 minutes left. He put Matt LaFleur in a nearly impossible decision to make. He made what may have been the wrong call. I grant you that. I think he should have gone for it. But the game was not lost on fourth and eight. The game was lost well before that.
That's fair.
And most of that blame would go on Aaron Rodgers over Matt LaFleur.
But it doesn't stop Aaron Rodgers from taking a coach that has helped transform his career, helped him grow in the second season to get back to an MVP type of form. to at the end of the year when he gets
Jordan
the chance
Love sitting there.
to dig in the knife a little bit. Yeah, I think that it's an interesting position, but also one of these three things, and I've heard Brock on your guys' podcast talk about how he would love to have an experienced play caller. I would love to have an experienced play caller because there is some level of learning that you have to do and growing you have to do on the job when you haven't been in that position. All three guys have not had a great background in calling plays.
Yeah, this whole search, this is what we talked about this morning. Look, my sniff test is out there right now. Mm. Like, I just something doesn't smell quite right.
With what?
The fact that this has taken 2 weeks. That's a long time. Now, there's plenty of realistic and very reasonable excuses for that. They weren't preparing. Maybe, you know, we've talked about the fact that maybe Shoddy quit and they weren't prepared
for
it.
Why don't you believe any of them?
Well, I do. I actually believe a lot of them. Just the sniff test is out there to try to figure out what's going on here. Are the Seahawks struggling to find the right person, or are people not that interested in this job? And I don't know the answer to that. This is not me sitting here going, I'll tell you what I think. I don't know. But it does seem odd that a job, an offensive coordinator job, under one of the premier head coaches in the game for one of the few elite quarterbacks in the game would stay empty for 2 weeks while some of the rumored candidates have signed elsewhere. That's odd. It's surprising. I thought that this would have... Look, I was glad they decided to overturn every rock to try to find who was out there. That's a week. Now you're 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you had to wait for some guys to finish playing, and maybe you just wanted to see, you know, Buffalo had to lose. There are plenty of good reasons for this, but it's odd. You don't see it in the NFL very often, especially with the caliber of player and coach that are Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. So is there an issue with potential coordinators coming in and saying, I don't know, something doesn't smell right there?
It does lead you to question that and wonder that.
Have to wonder.
I do think that if you're looking at this from a positive lens, there is a very clear-cut answer. That you're looking at Ken Dorsey and you're looking at Luke Getsy and saying,
needed them to lose.
We needed these guys to lose so that we could at least interview these guys to know exactly what we want.
Good.
You've had the chance to interview Shane Waldron, and I have to imagine that interview went well just based off of what I've learned about him and the background that he comes from. But I think that you look at Ken Dorsey, who is an interesting name that people are kind of hyping up right now. Is he worth the salt?
Luke he doesn't Getsy have to teach Russ how to throw a spiral, though, right?
No.
Because that was not his specialty.
No, he doesn't have to do that. No, nope, nope. Can you help schematically help him, you know, give him enough juice to help him take him to the next level and empower him to do what he needs to do? And can either one of those guys do that? Can Luke Getsy, with his background in Green Bay, I think Pete Carroll probably looks at Green Bay and says, kind of like the way that they play ball.
Yeah,
I want
to run the ball
quite
a bit and get what you got out of jump. Look, I hope you're right about all that, and I'm wide open to the fact that those are the good reasons. I'm also open to the fact that Pete and Russ, if there are people that aren't interested in this job,
mm-hmm.
look to yourself in the mirror and say, what am I doing to contribute to that problem?
Mm. Mike, last second here. You have a new Brock and Sock podcast dropping tonight, brockandsockpodcast.com.
Yes.
Do you want to do a really quick tease?
I mean, there's going to be a lot of what we just talked about. NFC, AFC championship breakdown. A little excitement about the Mariners. I know you guys sort of doing the whole Mariners bash and stuff this week. I find myself really, I know it's early, but maybe because the winter hasn't been that bad, I'm kind of almost into baseball mode right now.
Good.
I'm really excited. I think we've forgotten. I know we talk about all the young talent on the team. Don't sleep and don't forget on just how clean they played last year for a young team. They didn't make a lot of defensive errors. They didn't make a lot of base running mental mistakes. They weren't that good because all the talent wasn't there and they were inconsistent. But the fact that they played as smart and clean as they did, as young as they were last year, I think bodes for a really fun, exciting team this year.
You know, we got Justin Dunn coming up at 1 p.m.
Ooh, nice. He's a good dude.
Yes.
Boston College guy.
Yeah, really.
You can ask him about A.J. Dillon.
Sneakerhead.
Yeah. Yeah, a little A.J. Dillon conversation with this BC guy.
Yeah, perfect.
Harold Landry.
You can download that at brockandsockpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, Mike.
See ya.
All right, we were talking about DK Metcalf, his comments about the offense. Now let's talk about our comments about what we'd do if we were DK Metcalf. Is a future extension with Seattle now in question? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
A I saw.
I always was wondering when I listened to this beat what it was missing. I just found out. It is Stacey's ad libs to
this. I annoy myself. We're talking about DK Metcalf's comments to Brandon Marshall to start the show. Can we play that one more time? Cut one. Here's what he said when asked by Brandon Marshall on his podcast, I Am Athlete, what happened in the second half of the season to the offense?
What happened to the Seattle Seahawks, bro?
I'd get teams just start to figure us out.
Yeah.
We've been running deep ever since Pete got there. Play action, run the ball, go deep. Teams just said, we just not going to let y'all go deep.
So we were talking about what happened. Now, that's one part of the conversation. The second part of the conversation is, if it doesn't change, or if you become an offense that just genuinely throws the ball less, you're going to have some explosive plays in there, right? But maybe you don't get to 1,000-yard receivers like you did this year. And that's not the end of the world. There's some good offenses that didn't have two 1,000-yard receivers. If you are DK Metcalf, and as he also tells Brandon Marshall, you want to be a Hall of Famer, cut number two right here.
Don't ever let making it be the mountaintop.
Ooh. That's a good one.
I know a lot of people, once they make it to the league, no, that's it. Like, I've made it, and I'm fighting for a gold jacket. That's my goal.
So, you want to be a Hall of Famer.
DK dropping some nuggets there.
And as a wide receiver, whether or not you're in an offense that wins, that will mean being in an offense where you can put up big numbers. Is this an offense where, if it leans more run heavy, you start wondering when you're there for an extension whether or not you want to stay? I'm not speaking anything into existence. This is a genuine question. If you are a receiver who wants to be a Hall of Famer, do you want to be with an organization where you are more often than not going to have a 1,000-plus yard season, not going to have 100-plus targets?
Well, if you're going to be one of the greatest of all time, it's not good enough just to have a 1,000-yard season.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But right? I'm saying the those numbers, changed, yardage, yeah. Targets, touchdowns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It becomes a part of your decision making, a part of your process. And if you're looking, if you're DK Metcalf and you're looking at all the other teams that have been playing in the playoffs, you look at the way that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers use Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. You look at Green Bay Packers and how they are able to move around Devontae Adams and put him in a variety of different positions to get him the ball and utilize his skill set. You look at Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and it with Kansas City. I mean, you just look across the board and you could see that and you can go, yeah, I want that. I want that for myself. And if we are unable to do that as an offense and go backwards and not utilize and maximize my skill set to its fullest capabilities, is this the place that I want to be and envision myself being over the course of my career? I mean, one thing that's a legit question, and I think that deserves a legit answer at this current time. If you're thinking that way and you have an offense that is more run oriented and you become easier to cover and double cover because of that, I think that makes your job a lot easier. And what I know from DK Metcalf, knowing him personally and talking to him and know his goals and know his aspirations, you know, this isn't necessarily something that is on his radar. He's focused on the work. He's focusing on trying to continue to improve himself and his game and what he can do from year one to year two to year two to year three, right? I think that that's what he's really focused on. But at the same time, I think that there has been a shift and transition in the NFL, Stacey. For a long time in the league, in terms of power dynamics, it was always viewed as, you are very lucky and fortunate if the team that drafted you wants to sign you to a deal and there is a form of loyalty that needs to be had with that team. That is not the case anymore. As you see players, more and more players asking for trades and wanting trades, and you see players looking out more and more about themselves and their legacies and what they can do and being in the right positions to succeed, I think this is just as much on organizations to show these types of players, not every player, but your star talent, that this is the right place for them for not just now, but in the long term in their future.
Well, and if you're winning Super Bowls, the conversation does become tougher. The decision, that is, becomes tougher. If the Seahawks are getting to Super Bowls, getting to NFC championships, and they're being successful with the offense Pete Carroll wants to have, then if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm thinking, do I want a 100-yard season, or do I want Super Bowls? But that's not the conundrum they're currently in. They have not gotten to an NFC conference championship until since the 2014 season, and they have not gotten past the divisional round. In fact, they have one playoff win in, the last four seasons? So that's not actually the conundrum here, and it's being pointed out, well, hey, do you want 1,000-plus yards or do you want a Super Bowl? Obviously, you want Super Bowls. Everyone wants Super Bowls. It's what you play this game to do, but every single player on every single roster thinks that he is the best way to win a game. That's how you get to this level. You don't get to this level by not being a competitive person.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to be a top five player in your position group in the NFL without thinking, give me the ball.
Right. But also, when you play that cut, Curtis, can we play that cut again? Cut number one, where DK Metcalf is talking about, you know, what happened in the second half of the season.
What happened to the Seattle Seahawks, bro?
I'd get teams just start to figure us out.
Yeah.
We've been running deep. Ever since Pete got there, it's play action, run the ball, go deep. Team just said, we just not going to let y'all go deep.
To me, I don't think that DK Metcalf was being malicious in this comment. I think that he got a question that he probably wasn't expecting. That interview with Brandon Marshall and Chad Ochocinco is more designed about just asking about the life of a person rather than the X's and O's, right? It's
exactly.
A very much a, I'm more than an athlete. That's what the name of the show is, right? I mean,
I am athlete,
but it's about being more than just an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I think he got surprised by a question. He answered it the way that he saw fit in that moment. I don't think he divulged anything that wasn't obvious to everybody else. But at the same time, when you look at DK Metcalf and his career and his trajectory, that person that just asked, do you want Super Bowls or do you want 1,000-yard seasons? Well, who's to guarantee that this is the place to win a Super Bowl? I mean, we would all love to think that it is, and that this has a great opportunity to do that with all the talent between DK and Russell and Tyler and the rest of the group. But they haven't gotten past the divisional round since 2015.
That's all I'm saying. It is kind of rich to be like, well, do you want to be here and win? What do you mean, do you want to be here and win? Like, many other teams won more than you did. Don't get me wrong, Seattle, one of the most successful organizations, but I'm a bit surprised, to be totally honest, by some of the responses here, Jake, on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line saying, does DK want to win or not? Of course he wants to win.
And guess what? Do you not think that other winning franchises and winning quarterbacks would not love to have DK Metcalf a part of their roster?
Now,
I mean, come on.
One thing I'll add is that you don't have to be in a pass-heavy offense to still have great seasons. A friend of DK Metcalf, A.J. Brown, down
Correct.
In Tennessee, where they have Derrick Henry. He still had 1,075 yards this year, 11 touchdowns. So he had a really solid season, and that wasn't even a full season. He only started 12 games, appeared in 14 of them, still had 106 targets. But I'm assuming, A, any receiver, including Brown, would still want even more than that because you're a ball player. That's what you want. But also, they have Derrick Henry, and so there is a lot of having to spread the love around there. You don't have that situation in Seattle, and you may not even have Chris Carson should he continue to move on. So if you are an incredibly promising young receiver like DK Metcalf, you're looking saying, how do I make myself a part of the core of this offense?
Well, and the reality is that, look, 1,300 yards for DK Metcalf, let's just say you went through the course of the season and you were more effective and you did not have this 8-week stretch and you ended the season with 1,300 yards and the season ended differently and more promisingly, I think that you have a different outlook on the way the season went. But if you're DK Metcalf and you have 1,300 yards and your production drastically changed because your offense was ineffective in terms of making adjustments and putting you in better positions to be able to have more of an impact between him and Tyler Lockett, it becomes extremely frustrating because you could have done even better. You could have had even more out there. And it's not from a selfish point of view. It's from a winning point of view. It's from a I want to be the best version of myself every single game possible. And I know that DK's looking back at this season and looking at what happened in his matchups between him and Jalen Ramsey and is hungry and is motivated to be better the next time that he faces Ramsey. But there's also, I believe, when you hear him answer that question, there's genuine frustration as to the lack of adjustments and the inability to combat just simple too high coverage or whatever the case may be that happened in the second half of the season. This offense was too talented to fall off the way that they did.
253, do you think the Seahawks would ever consider using DK like Tyreek Hill and flipping the ball on sweeps and things like that? A very good question. Don't answer it, Jake, because we do have our question and answer segment coming up at 145, what I need to know, all kinds of fun questions like that. Hang on to that. I'll hang on to that one for you, 253. So we'll get back to that later. Coming up at 1230, we're going to have Root Sports Seattle Kraken play-by-play announcer John Forslund. He'll be joining us. Before we get to that, we've narrowed the OC search down to three guys that we've really liked talking about. Jake kind of leading that charge here. They feel like one of the three might be the best fit, might be the guy. We'll get to that next.